You are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
With Finding Your Forte show on Up to Me Talk Radio. We are super excited to bring you the Power Lunch Hour again this Wednesday at noon. Hopefully everyone was able to safely weather the storm. Our hearts, minds, and prayers go out to those of us that were victims or impacted by the hurricanes that came through recently, Irma, and that, you know, people are able to recover and get on with their lives. And we just really want to be able to welcome everybody back to business as usual with the show, and we're really excited to bring to you our guest today. So just to kind of get reconnected, first of all, thank you again to Shante Khan, the author and singer of the song that you heard at the top of the hour, Free Your Dreams, which I've actually recently gotten news that she's about to release a new album, but this song is Free Your Dreams, and I would highly encourage each of you to get a copy of it off your favorite music downloading or streaming portal. It's a great song to keep in your personal mental atmosphere to be inspired and to, you know, be motivated to think purposefully. So we're really excited today to bring to you our guest for today, who's Kevin Jones. And Kevin and I go way back, both personally and professionally. I've had an opportunity to see his career trajectory through the really extraordinary work that he's done in the business development lane. And we've got some new updates on things that he's been up to as of late. I just want to take a moment and say, hi, Kevin. Thank you, and welcome to Finding Your Forte Talk Show.
Oh, well, thank you, Reggie, and I'm happy to be here, and I'm pleased that you made it through the storm okay. Everybody on our side did as well, and I second your sentiments. We certainly have still some folks in our thoughts and prayers who are still working their way through it.
Absolutely, and I know that storms bring on their own additional set of implications, particularly for families like yourself that are raising children that might be impacted by school being in or out. Are you okay with my two favorite niece and nephew, Dasha and Mike? Are they fine?
I was able to survive that storm too. Particularly, you know, my little boy, his nickname is he's a walking tornado. So
okay.
So I was very happy to drop him off at school this morning.
Again, you said that, not me. So thank you for getting us the update on them. Today I really am interested to introduce you to our listeners in a compelling way. Just a little bit of background for those of you tuned in. So in addition to, and I'll come back later and loop back on the personal front, but recently, Kevin had the opportunity to go through the Finding Your Forte experience with a peer group. In fact, probably one of the more outstanding experiences is a part of the Men Legacy and Purpose peer group that's co-facilitated by Jawanza Watt. And so Kevin had an opportunity to go through that experience and as a result landed on a purpose that, I don't know if you believe in coincidences. I don't, but at the same time, was taking shape with his next, you know, kind of career move that I'm hoping to learn more about. So, Kevin, would you mind just kind of starting our conversation by sharing a little bit about, you know, what you're up to as of late, and perhaps giving us a walk through your career to this point?
Sure. So that was a very impactful experience going through that session with you and Juwanza, and not only from a career standpoint, but also to make you think about what you want your legacy to be, and not only from a professional standpoint, but from what kind of legacy you leave with your children and in your community. And it made me think about branding in a whole different way, and not just the immediate here and now and what you're trying to accomplish day to day, but what you're trying to leave moving forward and establishing a legacy. So that was really, I really benefited from that session with you guys. What led me there, I've had a 10 plus year career in sales. And that's been everything from 100% commission outside sales to inside sales to a combination of doing inside and outside to being a more of a senior sales rep dealing with outside accounts. And I was leaving one. I started my career in selling radio and have done technology sales, and where I spent the better part of the last 6 years has been specifically in the credit and data industry. And that meant starting in that field with Equifax and recently working with Experian. And I was transitioning from Experian, trying to think about what I could do more specific to what I cared about and what was my passion. As it related to what I was doing. I mean, I am somebody who has a weird passion for data. I'm kind of a data nerd. Aaron, you know us personally. You know my wife, Aaron. She'll tell you I crush people at trivia. I'm that type of person who's like, I have a lot of facts in my head, and they vary in usefulness, but finding out more information, being able to apply it, is like part of my makeup. And so it's what I think led me to be successful in that industry, because when I was able to talk to people about how they can make use of data to improve how they run their business, it was something I actually believed in. But what I was looking for was to find a way to make it more specific to my passions that go beyond just professional, but thinking about, you know, how can I marry what I care about professionally and personally and have an impact on the community that I'm in, particularly since, you know, I have two younger children, and in the last 4 years we moved into a community where specifically for the school system, and we're very involved with the school, and, you know, very close with our neighbors, and I'm just feeling like I need to think about how I can make more of an impact in my community and not just do what I do to make money and feel good about myself, but how can I take what I'm good at professionally and impact the community? And what I learned through your session about building a legacy is I could find a way to apply my two passions of both professional and personal in a way that I had not considered before. And you talk about coincidence. It happened to be going on while I was taking on this position that I have now with Copernicus MD, where we are focused on helping and providing data analytics and financial services to medical practices, hospitals, primary care physicians, orthopedic, dental, all of that, all of these different businesses that are in an industry that has a huge ceiling to overcome from an educational and training standpoint. And you know, you could build up a mountain of student loan debt getting the training that you need. And then once you get into the industry, even though you are able to be compensated heavily. You spend an awful lot of time trying to chase down that compensation if you're have your own practice, or if you're part of a practice, or even major hospitals. It's ironic how the level of preparation and the level of kind of sociopolitical status that people in the healthcare industry have, from, you know, doctors to medical research folks to the you know, the PA or the nurse that helps you. Nobody tends to think about those professions as being anything less than honorable, because they're healers, and their job every day is focused on helping people. But everybody who works in that industry knows that it's not like when you go to a store and you know the price and you pay the price and boom, the transaction is done.
Right.
There's a lot of ambiguity and confusion about what the price is for different things.
Exactly.
On both sides. And
mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, and we'll talk about this more later, you know, the changing climate in healthcare, it leads the patients being confused about what they're being charged for, and the healthcare professionals left chasing money that they didn't expect to have to chase initially, and it's all confusing. And so I saw this, specifically what I came out of your session with, as a purpose, and how I married my professional and my personal interests, is that I wanted to help empower businesses, specifically minority businesses, but I think it's broader to the fact that any business, I wanted to empower them with the data that could help them run their business more efficiently. Because once you are running your business at an optimum level, it frees you up to be more impactful in your community. And that's the message I want to carry through with anybody who I work with, is that I want to help you be able to be as efficient and as profitable as you can, so that you can not waste valuable time and energy on chasing down money to keep the lights on and your staff paid, but think about how you can use that time and possibly extra revenue to invest in the community that you're a part of. I come from a history in working in the industry that I've worked in that you want to be a great company, but you also want to be a good company. And that means you want to be successful and profitable and, you know, do the best work, but you also want to be a good company that's a good citizen, a good corporate citizen within the community. And particularly when you talk about the healthcare industry, where somebody may have the same family doctor for, you know, their most of their life, and, you know, kids have a pediatrician that they grow up with, you are part of the community of patients that you serve. And if you're always in a position where you're having to have that cloud of financial ambiguity hanging over you, it can impact how deeply involved you get with the community. And particularly in, when you look at the country and you think about the economy at large, you know, the more that we can help the healthcare industry be healthy financially, the better, because there's a lot of change that's going to happen now with the change in the healthcare laws, and there's going to be a lot of new responsibilities on the individual patient and how they pay for that. So it was really cool that that's sort of a trite way to put it, but it was really fortuitous that going through that process with you and Juwanza helped me see how I could focus a vision on how I wanted to find a greater purpose in my work and marry it to the new career opportunity that I was pursuing.
Well, you just gave us so much that I wanted to unpack, and I really thank you for it. You know, so it might feel trite to say it was really cool, but I think it was really cool to experience. And you're right that it was somewhat gratuitous to be able to have that experience. I mean, there's so much about the way that you came to that I think is really helpful and a teachable moment for others that are considering going through a process, whether it's finding your forte or your own purpose discovery experience, going through a process to get clear on their work. The first thing I want to talk about that you mentioned is, you know, you talked about the notion of having, I'm paraphrasing, but kind of a heightened level of existence that was more about, more than just about a job, that it was more, that it was, you know, it, that you challenged yourself, or that this process gave you the opportunity to see your work as a broader impact than just, you know, provision for your family, or, you know, kind of continuance of a career. I think that's really powerful. I think a lot of people that are stuck in complacency around the pursuit of purpose, that's really one of the myths that, you know, kind of loom over their head, is that this thing that they might be called to do feels like it's something different than you know, a focused career. And in fact, I think it's quite the opposite.
Yeah, and you know, you bring up a good point. It, you know, somebody who's had a career in sales, definitely I've always been one who's been motivated by the reward, and been motivated by, you know, the compensation factor of what I did. You know, we were talking before we went on air about, you know, in the past I did some work in radio where I was doing some stuff behind the scenes in the booth, but what got me in the sales was selling radio. The pure motivation was from the fact that I was young and broken. That paid more money. But
right,
as you get older and your perspective expands, and you've made some money and you've put yourself in a position to set up a life for yourself, you start thinking about things beyond your own personal and your own family's benefit and gratification. I mean, you know, getting involved with my kids' school more makes me think about, you know, what can we do to make the school better, to make it better for the kids, to make it better for the community and the people who are living here. And, you know, it's something that, you know, 5-10 years ago, if you had said I would have been, you know, my kid's room parent for their second grade class, I'd be like, nope, no way possible. no way I could have even contemplated being able to have the time or the will and motivation to do it. But, you know, my perspective has changed. And I think one of the things that we lose sight of professionally is that you have to be able to, in your career and your professional pursuits, allow yourself to evolve and change the same way you do professionally. I certainly care about things differently in my personal life, and that's got to impact how I care about things in my professional life. So if all I'm worried about is making money in my professional life, even if the goal is not just for myself but for my family, it's going to leave a hole and a void if what I care about outside of work has evolved as well. So I think being able to find purpose in what you do is actually important, because it gives you motivation during the times where, you know, you aren't enjoying a particular aspect of what you do. I mean, even you know, people who live their dreams, you know, in entertainment or sports, or, you know, if you have some lofty pursuit that, you know, everybody knows you for, there are bad days doing that too. So you have to be able to find purpose beyond just purely compensation in what you do. And I think I was able to kind of crystallize that from the program we did, in saying, you know, just because I want to be more involved in my community, and I know, you know, where my strengths and my deficiencies are in that department, how can I marry that to, you know, being in sales? And what made me think about it is, well, I think about the services and products I've sold over the course of my career has all been about helping that business. What if I looked at it at another level? If I'm able to help this business to be successful, how would that impact the community they serve? And that's where I kind of got to, you know, my desire to become more active in my, you know, I'm not talking about changing the world, but if everybody can be more impactful and do things to help their more immediate community, it has an exponential effect that more people doing that on a smaller scale ends up developing a larger scale, you know, improvement across the board. You can't ask me open-ended questions, Reggie. I'll talk for like 3 hours.
Well, I think it's chock full of stuff that we want to hear. So I'll stop you if that ever changes. But I personally am enjoying it because you keep giving me things that I definitely want to try to expand a bit more. I mean, just kind of as we are making our way through this conversation, I want to remind our listeners that if you'd like to join our conversations and you'd like to dial in and ask a question or share a comment, please call 347-324-5246, and we'll get you into the conversation. Kevin, I want to pick up with a point that you made a little earlier and really expand this a bit for, again, others that are, you know, kind of on the precipice of what they should be doing career-wise in terms of pursuit of purpose. And it really helps us to knock down a myth that I think really kind of keeps a lot of people handcuffed. Oftentimes, people consider pursuing purpose as this noble, maybe nonprofit, you know, benefit, kumbaya, you know, Peace Corps type existence, and they miss the opportunity to see the abundance in pursuit of marketplaces and how really a lot of times the gifts that people bring to the table, like if, for example, if we look, you know, if we think about your gifts that you so very compelling or, you know, embracing around analytics and data. By the way, I'll have to come back and figure out who's more passionate about than you or Aaron. That should be an interesting conversation. And your passion around storytelling and connecting that to your gifts around, you know, so you went through StrengthsFinder, so we now know that at least in their words, input and learner and strategic or, you know, and intellection are strengths that you have. It's not hard to see how when you try to pull those things together with your motivations around altruism that you can then be focused on driving the profitability for your clients. And that in no way is some, you know, non-compensatory or financially rewarding existence. I mean, financial gain is one of the things that most motivates you. So, like, what would you say to someone that was leery of going through this experience who, and part of the reason was their fear that they may have to compromise themselves financially in order to pursue who they are personally?
You know, that's a great question, and you know, I think you bring up a good point with talking about the misconception or the myth about doing something for the greater good has to be mean that you have to have a bow of poverty. It's not the case. I've worked in nonprofit before, and even if you are a nonprofit, you still have to make enough money to keep the lights on and your staff paid, and to be able to have the processes in place to create the fundraising for the actual cause that you're fighting for. So even if you were going to pursue something that was a nonprofit organization, we still live in, for what is the most part, particularly in this country, a for-profit world. So you have to find a way to make it so that those who you look to partner with to help you with your larger goal, your altruistic goal, that most of the time you have to find a way for everyone to be compensated in some way. And for, when I talked before about being not just a great company, but a good company, a good way that corporations find a way to be a better citizen within the community is to partner with nonprofits and look for ways to make an impact in the communities that they serve, whether it be through, you know, funding of programs or donation of you know, property or finances for programs that help the community. So if you're somebody to where that is your goal and you're working, you know, in a corporate environment, not a nonprofit environment, one of the things you can maybe look at is how do I get to be part of that movement within my company? Because most major companies, excuse me, have, you know, if not full departments, a whole, you know, initiative that's driven within the company to give back to the communities that they serve, to fight for causes that they believe in. They may be somewhat related to the industry they're in, or they can be completely just related to the community that they're in. And if you're in a company and you're looking for a way to feel like you have a greater purpose than what just what you're doing from a day to day, that's one way where you can get involved with what your company does to enrich the community. Because I know, at least, you know, growing up and working primarily in Metro Atlanta, every company I've ever been involved with has had some initiative or sometimes whole departments that work specifically with either local or national nonprofit organizations, or just did things on their own to give back to the community. So if you're in your, excuse me, you're in your job and you're saying, you know, I like the lifestyle that my job affords, but it's not really meaning the, you know, I'm passionate about having a greater purpose or impact on the world than just doing what I do to make money. There are people who feel the same way within your company, and created avenues for which people within the company can reach out and contribute to the, you know, to the world at large in different ways. I would also say, so that's one way. I would also say you can look at it the way I looked at it from going through your 4K process and really focusing in on what I'm good at and what my passions are. I have friends who are out there and they're working for community activist organizations, and they're passionate about it and they're good at it. And, you know, some of them, like, who do mentoring programs, they're really great with being able to relate to young people and put them on the path. And I've looked at doing some of that stuff in the past before through companies I work with, you know, being a mentor, going through those programs. And while I was passionate about it, sometimes you have to be honest about what you're good at and what you're not. And just because your heart's in the right place,
right,
I found that that was not necessarily where my strength lied in terms of being able to make the impact that I wanted to make. So I had to think about, you know, if I'm having a hard time, if my end goal is to help, you know, young people in this community, and I'm having a hard time or I'm not meeting my own personal standards of conveying the messages that need to be conveyed and relating to the young people directly, what can I do that at the end result is feeding the movement to help them? And, you know, how can I go about it a different way that meets my strengths and what I'm good at? So when I think about trying to enrich the community, and I think about how that's done, there are multiple ways that you can try and enrich a community, particularly one that's depressed financially, that's gone through, you know, transitions, the ones that are, feel like they have barriers in their way. You can do it from the ground up and working with the people who are directly impacted on a day-to-day basis, and you can work on it from the top down. I frankly think you need to do it both ways, where you're working with those who care about the community, who are in positions of either power from a wealth standpoint or influence standpoint, to help those who are working with them directly. So I think about it like this. I think small business is the lifeblood of the country, and I think in the healthcare industry, that is an industry that touches literally every person in the country one way or the other. It doesn't matter where you're from, what your race, what your socioeconomic status is. Everybody has a shared experience of needing healthcare. And what I look at is if all the things that are going on with changes in our laws around healthcare, changes in the trends with insurance companies, if I can help, a hospital and a rural hospital, which relies on more Medicaid and more Medicare and more self-payers and doesn't have the luxury of being in a huge metro area where they can benefit from a higher volume or from more insured and that type of revenue coming in. If I can help them stay financially solvent and be able to, afford to pay their staff, afford to help those who can't pay the full freight for their health care and still be able to provide that service for that community, then that has a greater impact in the community, even if I'm only helping the hospital on a professional level. And that can,
right,
you can take that,
right,
all the way down to even, in a major metro market like Atlanta, there are still individual communities that, there may only be one or two doctors within that zip code that service a larger group, or a couple of different clinics that people rely on more so than they do some of the larger hospitals. And if you're able to help everybody from the largest hospital in the city down to the individual primary care doctor, if I'm able to help them, be able to meet all their expenses and then also,
right,
be able to help them provide more transparency and better service to their patients, which is, we'll touch on more specifically in a minute. If I'm able to help them do that, then that can have a more longer lasting effect on the community at large. If, people aren't turning down healthcare because of the cost, because I've empowered a doctor with a method to be able to work with them so that they,
right,
don't, so they can afford the service they need. If we're able to do that, if I'm able to do that, then I'm able to help that business, help that community. And it might also be able to help that business. Part of finding your purpose and being passionate about how you can apply that to your professional life is, when you're having those professional conversations, you ask them about their purpose and what they're passionate about. And oftentimes, particularly in the medical field, people care. They might have even specifically gotten into that field for specific reasons. You have people who are very passionate about causes relating to healthcare, whether it's things like cancer prevention to obesity to different specific illnesses that they want to try and help people gain awareness on and treat. Oftentimes, you will find in that industry, almost unilaterally, people have are passionate about something beyond their day-to-day job that impacts the overall community. So being able to help them be more financially sound and take some of that burden off of them can help them apply more of their time and energy to the causes that they care about and the actual reason why they got into the business in the first place, which is helping,
right,
people.
Right, right. Yeah, I definitely want to try to pick that up and expand it a bit more. But if for now, I want to take a quick break and give our listeners a chance to maybe grab a quick drink. And for us, we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back. So for now, let's just take a quick break.
Every hiring manager knows that a company is only as good as the people it's made from. So where do you find the best people? That may surprise you.
Meet the grads of life, young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
This is talent worth knowing about.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Well, welcome back, everyone. We are on the Finding Your Forte show. I'm your host, Reggie Hammond, and we're on with Kevin Jones. And Kevin is sharing with us the perspective that he's come to exist in with the work that he's doing from a business development perspective around empowering medical practitioners, practices, small hospitals through the solution set that he and his organization are taking to market, and how that, in terms of the benefits and outcomes it produces both for them directly as small businesses and for the populations that they serve in terms of patients are all made better. It's like this whole stream of mutual benefit. So, Kevin, I really would like to, you know, kind of pick up with that from there in, and again, feel free to continue to be expressive, but I want to pick up from there. And, you know, if you were able to bring someone into the implications of the work that you all are doing and what it means for, you know, really what is a healthcare crisis in this country and even the political climate that surrounds it, you know, tell me, like, what's at stake for, you know, these small medical practitioners that really are on the front line treating patients and their ability to focus on them, as opposed to, you know, payment and collections and some of the other things that you guys have been able to resolve through your solution set.
Yeah, so you talked about what I had to say before. There's a lot to unpack in this. The trend that we're seeing in healthcare, and this is not a new trend, it's been going on for a while now, is regardless, and this is really from a political stance, pretty agnostic, regardless of whether or not we had no ACA, no Obamacare, or with the ACA, Obamacare, neither one of those situations where we didn't have any sort of universal health care in place before, and in the last 7 years, going on 8 years, we've had something in place. It hasn't really changed the fact that your deductible has been going up, and you can have a debate on whether or not you think what different laws have impacted those to go up faster or higher, or whether or not you think the way things were structured with the current legislation we have in place has accelerated that or whatnot. But the fact is, regardless of the situation from a political landscape, the reality is everybody's deductible is going up. And over the course of 20 years, I don't think there's any organization that you can look at from an insurance perspective where they didn't have growth in what the deductible was or what the premiums were or both. Insurance companies are in a position where they have to manage their, particularly the publicly traded entities where they have to manage their profits and are beholden to shareholders just like any other company. And plenty of them now you see with all the marketing campaigns, they're rewarding loyalty and offering programs to people who've been with them a long time to be able to save money or not get dinged as badly as they used to on their premiums when they have an accident and things like that. And you've been able to see, particularly in the auto space, more concessions like that. But in healthcare, nobody really knows the dynamic between the healthcare providers and the insurance providers when you're looking at it from perspective of a patient. We don't have any kind of insight into how that process ultimately translates into me paying more money for my healthcare, even though I'm paying premiums. So here's some insight into that. We've probably all been in this position where we've gotten a letter from our insurance provider that wasn't a bill, but it had some totals or some numbers on it about what they paid and what we may have or may not have paid in a copay. And they're like, this isn't a bill, but here's what happened with the healthcare that you received recently. And sometimes they will say in that letter, expect a bill from your doctor. What that is, what we're talking about, I'm not going to go into the acronyms and the terminology here because it's extensive. I'll just really break it down in layman's terms. You have, when a physician provides service to you as a patient and you have insurance, there, depending on what the actual procedure that you went through and how it was coded was, there may be some sort of monetary copay there at the front, or there may not be. They send off to the insurance provider, you know, what the charges were for the procedure or the services they provided to the patient. The insurance company then sees, okay, here's what you charged, and they send back to the healthcare provider, here's what I'm going to pay you. And surprise, surprise, Reggie, that number usually does not match up. Usually the number, in fact, I would say 99.99% of the time, that number that the doctor sends to the insurance company is higher than what the insurance company sends back. So, well, I may say that, hey, this procedure that I did with this person costs, for example, $2,500. The insurance company will come back and say, great, per our contract and what we will pay with you all, we're going to give you $2,000. Go get the remaining $500 from the patient. We're done. So now, as the physician, I've received a statement from the insurance provider that, you know, here's what I'm going to be paid, and, you know, I may have gotten a copay. So let's say I got a $10 copay initially from the visit. So it leaves me remaining $490. Now, I have to bill my patient, who I've already provided services for and who's already, you know, paid their copay and knew the insurance was going to take care of the remaining portion and moved on with life to the next thing. Now I have to go back to them and say, hey, I need to get another $490 from you. And that can be related to the fact that we don't really have a running tally of what our deductible is when we're going in to the doctor, and the doctor doesn't upfront, when you first come in, know what your remaining deductible is. So even though they take a copay from you, they may not know what that difference is going to be. And so, you know, the insurance company, you know, it may not necessarily be that, oh, we think you're charging too much for this procedure at $2,500. We're only going to pay you $2,000. And maybe this person has X amount left on their deductible, and they got to cover the rest of this because they haven't met their deductible yet. If they pay this amount, they'll meet it, and we'll pay the remainder. And since oftentimes, just what the insurance company has agreed to with the healthcare provider is that they are not going to necessarily pay exactly what the healthcare provider charges. So you might say to yourself, well, why don't the charges match up? There are different reasons why different procedures cost money at different facilities. You may find if you're actually able to go through charges that you have from a hospital stay, that you may be getting charges for things in the hospital that are way more or way different from what you may get from an outpatient care provider. So the insurance companies have become pretty wise and granular to that, to know who charges what for what. And they are not going to give you just a blanket, okay, whatever it is, we'll pay for it. They're going to come back and say, here's what we think this should cost. And that's even outside of your deductible. So you're never really going to have a situation where, unless you've completely burned through your deductible and you're at the point where you're at 100% pay by the insurance company, where it's not coming back on you. And usually by that time, you spent so much money in the first place to break down your deductible that, you know, you may not be seeing that to where you have 100% pay by the insurance company to like towards the end of the year. The tough issue that you're looking at when you're somebody who's, say you're a individual practice, I've gone to school for what, 15 years and done some residency to be a doctor. And I have a practice that I've started maybe with a couple other partner doctors, and we've set up our practice where we're working with insurance providers, and none of us are really equipped to have a conversation about, you know, money or try to collect money from a patient. So we have office staff that works with that. Well, what we were talking about before, there are people who are passionate about finance don't usually gravitate to the healthcare industry initially. So you don't, you may not have somebody who is, you know, a financial wizard, or somebody who is like me who can't wait to talk to, on the phone and ask people for money. You'll have people who are passionate about helping people get better, and now they have to have conversations about, hey, I need to get more money from you, person who I was only talking about how I was passionate about helping you get better. It's a tough situation to put everybody in. And what, regardless of what the political climate is, this is not an issue that has just sprung up. There's been a lack of transparency in this process from the patient side and the doctor side, frankly, for a long time. And what I'm, you know, through the organization that I work with, Chronicus MD, what we provide is a proven technological solution that's worked in other industries. I'll give you an example. Much of my career in the credit data world was in the automotive industry. And what you, everybody's gone through a process of going on a lot and either having somebody buy a car for them or buying the car themselves. And it's not like going to Disneyland. It's it's not like you're waiting in line to get on Magic Mountain. You're waiting in line to have negotiations about how somebody's going to take your hard-earned money. And you can go through every scenario and, you know, stereotype about used car salesmen or how you feel the customer services in a car lot that you can think of. The experience, even when done perfectly and people were, you know, the pinnacle of polite and cater to your needs, the process still felt like it would take too long and would not be pleasurable. Part of that process had to do with going through the whole financing conversation and figuring out what your payment was going to be and what bank you're going to work with financing you and what the rate would be and how much would end up coming out of pocket there on site. And, you know, that's – it's just not a easy or pleasurable conversation to have, no matter how you look at it. And what we found would make the process easier, particularly in this, you know, generation that we have, the millennials, where they don't have a concept of living in a world like no internet or things being analog. They're used to being able to order whatever they want from Amazon or Netflix or what have you and have it show up on their TV screen or their computer screen or delivered to their door. So the concept of not being able to initiate and go through that process online to buy a car is, you know, nonsensical. So where we see the use of credit data coming into play is it's always been a part of the process where you'd have to access somebody's credit report to do the credit application and get them financed by the bank. But what we were able to show a number, you know, in past organizations that I work with and what those who I work with now have found in that industry is that you can help the whole process along by moving the discussion of the financing more to the front of the process. And you can do that online. You can pre-qualify people and not impact their credit score and give them an idea of what they actually qualify for. And so that you don't waste a lot of time trying to put somebody onto a car they can't afford or doing a whole bunch of acrobatics around the financing. You can know up front before you even step on the lot exactly what you qualify for. And that was very helpful for those who were able to embrace that fully and help them improve their sales cycle and the overall process with their customers when they came on the lot. Well, car dealers never had a problem finding a way to get paid before they gave you the car anyway. So for them, they were always able to, through financing partners and you know, payment plans and all that, find a way to make sure they got paid and had the vehicle delivered and have an ongoing relationship with that person. In the healthcare industry, you have you don't have any idea of what your options are when you walk in. What the service we provide through being able to connect directly with the insurance providers and with finance partners, we're able to, when you meet with your patient, they come in, you enter in their information, you're able to get what their current deductible level is right then and there. So when you've had the discussion about what the procedure is you need to do, it's an elective procedure, and you're trying to think about, okay, I need to have this done for my quality of life, but I don't need to have this done to save my life, at least not right now. But it will be a big impact on me to get this done. Let's say, for an example, having a neck surgery versus doing a long bout of physical therapy. That will be invasive to your schedule and will take much longer for you to feel right versus doing this surgery a week from tomorrow, and with limited recovery, you'll be have a much better quality of life. Well, because it's not life-threatening, how I'm going to be able to afford and pay for that is a huge factor in my decision-making. So knowing up front with the doctor and being able to have an open, transparent conversation, like, okay, Mr. Hammond, we ran you through our system, and we can see you have X amount left to pay as a deductible when we're going into this procedure. We can help you. You know, do you want to pay for that now? We can set up some sort of payment plan to help you pay that over time. You can pay it all now out of pocket. If you need help being able to afford it, we can help connect you with a financer who has an appetite to fund you for that at a low rate. And some of our partners, 0%, if it's something that can be paid off within a certain amount of time. And with that, it gives you options because you and the doctor now have a better sense of where you're at financially based on what your deductible is. You may see that total and say, oh, that's no big deal. I can go ahead and pay for that or set up a couple of installments and we can take care of that. Or you may say, like, whoa, I did not think I had that much left on my deductible. That is a lot. I really need to get this procedure done, but I don't know how I'm going to afford that. Well, our process allows you to have that conversation up front, not at the end of the process when things have already been done, and now you have a financial quagmire to deal with. Another part that's unique to us that we do is we pre-qualify people who come in, and this goes back to the example I was talking about in the auto industry. Without impacting your actual credit score, because we're pre-qualifying you instead of making you sit down and do an application for financing, you can find out who you can qualify with for financing right then and there. And we can actually provide the service for the practices in the hospitals where we can even take the conversation off their hands and say, hey, we can act as an agent on your behalf to be the payment processing arm of taking payments for your patients. So they can literally be at the office, see what your deductible is, see what you pre-qualify for, and the person at the desk could ring us up, hand the phone to you, and you could set up a payment process where it could do an automatic debit from your card, or you can set up exactly who you want to use from a financing perspective if that's the way you need to go. That paradigm shift in how you have the conversation about finances around your procedure, it opens up options to the patient. It relieves some stress that both the patient and the physician will have later when they're trying to figure out what the actual end cost is going to be for the procedure. And it makes the transition that I talked about before of helping the healthcare provider be able to fund what they do more efficiently so that it frees them up to put their time and effort into other things that will ultimately impact the community. I mean, it's all about bringing more transparency and more choice and options around how you're going to pay for your healthcare. Because the reality of the situation is, I don't care what aisle you sit on or what your moral beliefs around healthcare are, the reality of the situation is we're all going to have to start paying more out of pocket for our healthcare.
Right.
Unless something dramatically happens differently with this administration and in Congress around the ACA or anything legislating healthcare.
Right.
The reality of the situation is we are all going to have to start paying more for our healthcare. And from what I've just seen in the news cycle over the last 6 months, it doesn't seem like any potential ideas or solutions that have been floated out there on the congressional level have been about making sure we don't pay more for our healthcare out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been the contrary. It's I've heard a lot of solutions where it talks about enabling us to pay more things out of pocket or different things where maybe there's vouchers involved. At the end of the day, it's going to be something where you're more concerned about how you're going to finance your health care. You're going to have to what we've seen like a consumerization of your health care, where you're going to have to start making choices the same way about your health care that you would about major purchases and other aspects of your life. And that is not going away anytime soon. So whether you're a huge hospital, we've done analysis for some hospitals in the metro area that we're talking with right now, where we've shown them how by changing their process and using some of the tools we give them, because there's more from an analytical standpoint that we can do in terms of using our data assets to be able to look at your database of patients and being able to see, you know, where there are opportunities for collecting outstanding AR that you have, where there's from an aspect of being able to see how the analysis you've done in your portfolio of patients. For
right.
anybody who's working, particularly when you think about an affordable care organization or ACO, which is a group of healthcare organizations that band together to be able to receive funding from CMS for Medicare and Medicaid. The funding they get is based on the diagnosis that they've done for their patients. And we can actually use our data and analytics to show them where, you know, if you just code things more specifically and correctly based on what
mm-hmm.
you've done in your database, you
mm-hmm.
can have more accurate funding and not be in a position where you or your patients are in a lurch. So there's not just from everything that we do is focused on saving money and increasing revenue for these organizations,
right.
It's all based on how they use data to make better decisions. And I really do believe that when, from a business aspect, if your focus is to be able to treat people at the highest level possible, the more that this type of these what I would consider ancillary things for your ultimate goal of dealing with the finances and funding of your business, the more that you can get that shored up and done in a manner that's you know, less stressful and less time consuming and you know, allows it to take certain aspects of your business off the plate of people who that's not what they're passionate about or trained to do. Then it allows you to treat your patients better. And I don't just mean treat from a medical standpoint, but be able to have a better relationship with your patients. Because I got to tell you, we go to the same church. And, you know, I was raised Catholic. I'm a practicing Methodist. I had never, until we went to this church we both go to, Impact Church, I had never been in anybody's church where they broke down the quarterly financials. First time they did that at service, Reggie, I was like, well, this is my church for life.
It does just brings a whole, you know, a whole another level of accountability. Coincidentally, we are actually in the process of reframing that. So I think, you know, that definitely, and I, you know, what I'm really excited to, you know, kind of hear you describe is just the overall mutual benefits and outcomes for all involved in, you know, in the tools that you're bringing. Kevin, I thank you so much for spending the hour with us. It was definitely, a compelling conversation that we could go on for quite some time. In fact, we'll probably hang up the phone and do that, end the show and do that. But thank you for coming on, and I really appreciate you sharing your calling in a way that you know, compels others to, you know, and inspires them to discover theirs and to connect in such a profound and, quite frankly, you know, financially driven way that drives value for all the various stakeholders involved. With that, I will close out and ask our listeners, hopefully you enjoyed our show today. We ask you to tune in next week the same time and look on our social media channel to get updates from the guests. And if you have any questions or would like to follow up with us, please feel free to reach out to me directly at reggie.hammond@yourcrescendo.com. And until then, we encourage you to find your forte, compose your masterpiece, and play your crescendo. Have an amazing day, everyone.
You've already won. Look up for some.